So Brett Hayes, associate professor of political science, our academic star here, and of course I should mention at Union College. Let me ask you about, because nothing has turned our listeners on to the radio more than any discussion of Donald Trump. Is there a point at which everybody says, ah, that's enough of that now?
Yes, I think there is. I don't know where that point is, but I mean, if we look, so thinking a little bit about coming on, I knew we'd have to talk about Trump at some point.
Sure.
So I went back into my notes.
Especially if you play bridge.
And I looked at, I was making an appearance on Congressional Corner back in September of 2011. And Rick Perry had, you know, a double-digit lead at the time over Mitt Romney. If you go back to 2007, in I think it was around October, Giuliani was dominating. He was just, he had over 20 points over the next closest, and the next closest was Fred Thompson, right? So, you know, one of the stories here is it's very early, and there is a lot of kicking the tires right now of candidates. There's also a lot of celebrity right now that we know the name, you know, in 2007 of Rudy Giuliani, right? Everybody knows Donald Trump as a name, but that doesn't necessarily translate to support. I mean, if you look at his numbers, something that's been talked about a good deal is that his unfavorabilities are off the chart. I mean, he is viewed favorably by only a few small discrete groups.
Well, 18%.
Of
the Republicans.
Well, but depends which category. Yeah, so the Republicans, that's one that gets you. I saw 17%, but about, you know, 18%.
All right, I'll give you the difference.
Right. You know, I think it's the elderly as well, and self-identified conservatives.
Angry.
It's small, but one of the other things that's so interesting, right, that there's some noise, right? That's about favorability. If you look at those who say that they're supporting Donald Trump in the polls, there was an ABC Washington Post poll that came out the other day, that it seems as if Trump's support is coming actually largely from those that self-identify as moderate or liberal or somewhat conservative, right? So there seems to be a bit of a tension there. We see that he has higher support among those without college degrees, and he was doing fairly well in that poll among independents that are that kind of identify as Republicans. So, in other words, he seems to be doing best, at least in that poll, among groups that are the least likely to turn out. Right? That you have low education voters; they have the tendency to not turn out in Republican primaries. Moderates and those that are not very conservative tend to turn out less, right? So that he might be doing very well among Republicans in the polls, but that's different than who's going to turn out in places like Iowa and New Hampshire on caucus and election days. So there is a certain amount of kind of noise right now that when you begin to dissect may give us, you know, real questions about whether his popularity is sustainable and whether it will translate to electoral success.
Mm-hmm. Let's stay on the presidential election and the Republicans for a while. The U.S. Senate has four Republican presidential candidates. What are the implications of four guys who are senators running for this office?
Well, I think you see them. I mean, we've seen this so far that they are certainly using the Senate as a way of trying to poke the Obama administration, right, score points with the right, and to kind of generate support for their policies. I mean, you see this all over the place, right? We saw the exchange between Secretary of State Kerry and Senator Rubio over the deal with Iran. We were talking about the Supreme Court previously on Congressional Corner, and we saw that Ted Cruz held hearings on a constitutional amendment to require Supreme Court justices to sit for retention elections, right? So, in other words, he's using his position as a way of kind of scoring points with the right, et cetera, et cetera. So we see this all over the place. And so I think you see some of those kinds of things. And what it suggests is continued obstruction, right? That the likelihood that Obama is going to be able to work with the Senate is only negatively affected by the fact that you have so many individuals running for the White House that are also in the Senate.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff because there's always been this historic argument as to whether the chief executive of a state, a governor, is better equipped to be a president or a senator who has had some at least limited foreign policy decision making when they're in the Senate. How does that come down?
Well, I mean, it comes down to, you know, Trish, obviously, you know, what we see in the last, with our last two presidents, right? You have one coming, you know, you have Bush coming from the governor's mansion of Texas. You have a senator in Barack Obama. And so there's some choice there. I mean, I think one of the things that's so interesting is that if you are a Republican voter, you don't even have to make that choice this time because you have somebody that checks off both of those boxes in John Kasich, right? Although he's
or as the old saying goes, who?
Right, but he's having trouble, you know, getting any real traction, which is fascinating. So, you know, the first Republican debate is coming up. The selections, I guess, will be made on I think the 6th of August. The first debate is being held in Ohio, and it's possible that the governor of Ohio, a very popular governor in John Kasich, will not be on that stage. He might make it. He's real close. There are about five candidates that are within a point and a half of each other.
Well, in order to get last slot. In order to be one of the 10, yeah, you don't have to have much. You have to have about 2.5% or something like that.
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, what that suggests is that, you know, that it's been very difficult in part because of all of the 16 candidates now. It's hard for them to gain any traction, particularly with Trump taking up so much of the air.
So, right? So my question to you, yeah, Brad Hayes, and we're running out of time quickly, which kills me, is this. What about the 10 guys and the way we're doing this? They're saying, okay, Fox is saying you can only be on if you're in the top 10. Is that stupid or what?
Well, it has effects, right? I mean, I think we very much see this right now that in order to score any type of points, gain any type of headlines, you either have to attack Trump, right? That was kind of the Rick Perry, the Lindsey Graham approach, is sure, to have an aggressive approach against the front runner. Or you need to have an extraordinarily aggressive tone. I think we see this with Mike Huckabee. He's trying to get a little bit of traction by coming down hard on Obama for the Iranian accord.
And using a Holocaust reference, yeah, which is very dubious to a lot of people.
No, absolutely. Or even interestingly, there's a little bit of infighting, right? That Ted Cruz, I mentioned him earlier, he's taken on his party leadership or the establishment for some legislative dealings that might result in the reauthorization of the Import-Export Bank, right? And so, in other words, you have to be really, really aggressive. It feels very divisive, and it feels, I think, even more than campaigns usually do, like the candidates are out for scoring points, and so that they can trend on Twitter and the like, so that their names go up in the polls.
Yeah, you're right, but I can't even imagine that 3% of Americans know what the Import-Export Bank is. So great to have you with us, Brad Hayes. You're a wonderful guy, associate professor of political science at Union College. You know so much. I appreciate it all.
Thanks, Alan.